Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee for this Tuesday, February 7th. We have a quorum and a couple of bills on our agenda today. The first item of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes as presented.
Thank you for that. Is there discussion?
Three and four.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the motion prevails.
All right.
So thank you, members. And just I'm going to make this announcement several times, but you know you can't say it enough. Next Tuesday, the 14th, we're actually not going to be in this room. We're going to be in room 5. That's a day that we have set aside to hear from counties, small cities, townships, local governments about their transportation issues and needs. Another committee needs this for a lot of remote testimony that day, so we obliged them and wanted to just announce again. We'll say this a few times. I don't want people schlepping all the way over here for the wrong committee. So next Tuesday, room 5. So our first bill is House File 677, and I will move that House File 677 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus finance bill, although there is some policy here, so we'll kind of navigate that here. It may end up in some of the policy may end up in a policy bill, but the main thing is that we're hearing this today. And just before you start, Representative Elkins, and I know we'll have other people talking about Bill Dooley, but I wanted the committee to know that, you know, from time to time we've named bills in honor of someone who has made significant contributions to transportation or the topic of discussion. And Bill Dooley passed away earlier this year and was a real champion of the issue that we're about to talk about. An incredible guy. I had the chance to know him and work with him. We had wonderful conversations over many years. And I especially appreciate that he was sort of a one-person clipping service. If there's ever anything topical on issues of transportation, particularly transit and active transportation, I know I would hear from Bill. And his family is here, and we're really honored to have you here as well. So with that, Representative Elkins, please let us know about House File 677.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment to offer.
Okay. You can offer your A1 amendment.
Yep.
I'll move that, even though you're on the committee. You can move it, too. We'll both move it.
Yeah, and
I'm moving it.
Mr. Chair.
It's like, what?
Yeah,
let us know about the A1.
Yes, the A1, for now we're taking out the, there are two speed limit provisions in the bill, and we're going to take those out for now. There's a new edition of the manual on uniform traffic control devices coming out this spring that will give quite a bit more leeway in setting speed limits than the current manual does. And we're engaged in productive conversations with the engineering associations in MnDOT and would like to just take this out for now until we have those conversations.
Okay. The A1 is before us that I have moved. Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. So now we have House File 677 as amended before us.
Yep.
Proceed.
Thank you. For those of you who have been on this committee before, I will be channeling a longtime member of this committee named Connie Bernardi, who is also still is a tireless advocate for bicycle and safety and active transportation issues. And when she retired last year, she asked me to pick up the torch and carry it. I've also worked on active transportation and bicycle safety stuff for a long time, too. So happy to be channeling Connie this morning, but I'm going to let Dorian Grilly, the head of Bike Minnesota, do most of the presenting this morning.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grilly, and welcome to the committee. And I'll also add that, you know, active transportation, which is includes bike, walk, and other non-motorized modes, is really all part of a multimodal approach to transportation that we're taking in this committee. And I appreciate all of your work over the years in promoting that. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee. My name is Dorian Grilly. I'm the Executive Director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. Thank you very much for hearing this bill, and thank you, Representative Elkins, for being the chief author. Bill Dooley was the hub that many things related to bicycling in Minneapolis, the metropolitan area, Minnesota, and Minnesota revolved around. He retired at 55 from his job as an insurance industry lobbyist to serve his community. He was an avid reader and endless source of information, as the chair pointed out, and analysis on issues related to biking, walking, and transit for all of his advocacy friends. He was a member of the Minneapolis Bicycle Advisory Committee, the Shared Use Mobility Collaborative, and a longtime member of our board of directors and the chair of our advocacy committee. He was involved in lots of other nonprofit and advocacy collaboratives. And his wife, Susan, daughters, Laura and Shana, are here today. And on behalf of them and all his friends and advocacy partners, thank you for entering his name into the permanent record of the state of Minnesota legislature. Article 2 of the bill, I think, is perhaps the most important part, and I think Bill would have thought so too. If you read his obituary that was in the Star Tribune on Friday or Saturday, I think, he talked about going by schools and seeing kids doing their bike safety training outside and just thinking that was the greatest thing. So Article 2 of the bill changes, schools may provide student safety education for bicycling and pedestrian safety to must. It also defines the program. The Bicycle Alliance feels that bike education and community engagement are essential investments that are needed to maximize the return on investment on infrastructure. About 10 years ago, the Bicycle Alliance worked with Blue Cross Blue Shield's Center for Prevention, MnDOT, and a steering committee to develop an elementary school safety curriculum called Walk Bike Fun. Since then, we have contracted with MnDOT to implement the curriculum, and we've been working with schools and public health professionals throughout the state to train educators to use it. To date, we've trained about 1,000 who are delivering it to about 100,000 kids per year. I envision Walk Bike Fun to be the maximum a school would choose to implement as part of this change, although we have helped many expand that to teaching Learn to Ride. At a minimum, pedestrian safety is already required as part of bus safety, so I envision that all we would be adding is a few minutes of bike safety training, discussing something like this bookmark, which says, follow the law, be predictable, be aware, be visible, and save your brain. Of course, make the choice to wear a helmet. The bookmarks are already available in Hmong, Spanish, Somali, and English, as are several Learn at Home handouts. We'll work with MnDOT and the Safe Routes to School Steering Committee to edit and condense them into a one-pager that could also go home in backpacks. That's pretty much it. A bookmark, a flyer, and a few minutes of school time once a year would be the minimum that you're requiring with that may to must change. I probably don't need to tell you that there are lots of studies that show that kids engaged in daily physical activity are happier, healthier, and more focused learners at school. A recent study of schools across the country found that schools that had infrastructure improvements saw 18% more kids biking and walking to school. Ones that had education saw a 25% increase, and ones that did both saw a 31% increase. As I said, active transportation education is a great investment. Article 3 of the bill does a lot of active transportation policy stuff. Section 1 requires agencies and governments to cooperate and MnDOT to continue to lead that effort and coordinate by providing active transportation design guidelines, active transportation planning, and technical assistance to local units of government. I might add that we think MnDOT is doing a pretty good job of this right now. We just want to make sure that that's the case well into the future. Section 2 reinserts the Active Transportation Advisory Committee as an advisor on the state bike route system. The committee, which was allowed to sunset a few years ago, is reauthorized later in the bill. Sections 3 and 4 establish the Mississippi River Trail and the Jim Oberstar Route, now known as the North Star Route, as state bikeways. The state bike route system has already been authorized, so we're basically just saying these need to be officially designated as state bike routes. Section 5 is about passing a bicycle. Chapter 169.18, subdivisions 3 and 5, should say the same thing, but they don't right now. This resolves that by saying that the passing distance when overtaking bicycles requires at least 3 feet or half the width of a vehicle in both subdivisions. So it's basically a technical correction. The change in Section 6 is a national best practice that was shared with us by the National Conference of State Legislatures and many national bike organizations. It changes the poorly understood and inconsistently enforced as far to the right as practicable language in the operation of a bicycle statute to as far to the right as the bicycle operator determines is safe. And if you've driven Jackson Street, north of University here, you know that riding as far to the right as practicable is not possible on Jackson Street. There's gigantic potholes. So anyway, I strongly recommend that change. Also from NCSL in Section 6, it makes it legal for bicyclists to proceed straight through an intersection from a right turn lane without turning right. This is also another national best practice. I know bicyclists are not often getting ticketed for doing this, and it is a best practice on a busy road with a wide shoulder that periodically becomes a right turn lane. But current law says that you must merge out into the traffic lane, go around the right turn lane, and if you don't and get hit by someone turning left, it's your fault. I don't think we should potentially penalize bicyclists for doing the best practice and something that is generally widely accepted. Section 7 is the stop as yield for bicycles, also referred to as the Idaho stop. This language also came from the NSL and is now law in 12 other states. It would allow a bicyclist to not come to a complete stop, still requires a bicyclist to slow, make sure that the intersection is safe to go through, and then proceed without coming to a complete stop. We think this is a best practice that will actually help law enforcement decide when to stop a bicyclist. We certainly do not support bicyclists blowing through stop signs. Section 8 reauthorizes the MnDOT Active Transportation Advisory Committee that I mentioned earlier was allowed to sunset. The expense will be minimal, and given that we are all accustomed to zooming around the state in two dimensions, I don't think there'll have to be many in-person meetings, although I think it'd be nice if they did that once or twice a year. Section 9 requires the first $500,000 appropriated for active transportation to be spent to develop and maintain and implement an active transportation safety curriculum for youth. So, you know, hopefully if it becomes a must-do for schools, MnDOT will have the capacity to implement that and work with the Bicycle Alliance to do so with that recommendation. I previously stated we think the return on investment in education is very, very high. Infrastructure costs millions of dollars. Educating people how to safely use the existing infrastructure in our community costs an order of magnitude less. Article 4 appropriates funds for active transportation. It appropriates $10 million a year for safe routes to school and $25 million for active transportation as an ongoing appropriation in the base budget. This is done with the intention of funding much of the match for the Federal Transportation Alternatives Program and increasing program as well as infrastructure investment. MnDOT has recently issued an RFP for active transportation, and they also had requested letters of intent, I believe, beforehand. They are expecting proposals to add up to 10 times the amount of money they have available. To me, that means MnDOT, the Statewide Health Improvement Partnership, the Bicycle Alliance, and many others have done a great job helping communities statewide understand the value of these investments in active transportation and safe routes to school that we are asking the legislature to make. There's little doubt that the return on investment will be high. Thank you very much for your time this morning. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Grilley. Are there questions for Mr. Grilley? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question regarding the change from the word shall to may regarding the training for the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any extra funding available outside of grants? Are we providing anything to the schools? Also, how would this affect potentially East Chain School District, which was a school district in my house seat, mm-hmm. where the nearest home to that school was over a half a mile away in the countryside? How many students do you expect are biking to school in the country? I lived 5 miles away from a school when I was growing up, and I never once rode my bike to school, and never really rode my bike outside of the farmyard area, and still don't. So can you explain how this mandate to schools, and also how many schools are not currently doing this? Because I remember when I was in elementary school, there was still there was school bus training, pedestrian training, and there was bike safety training. Although it didn't really make any difference to me, I wasn't riding a bike.
Correct.
Mr.
Chair, Representative Olson, I don't think it'd make a lot of difference in the, you know, those kids riding to school. But the idea is simply that those kids should be able to learn how to use the existing infrastructure in their community safely, meaning they might not use it to bike to school, but the kids who live in the community would be able to ride around town. And the kids, and we've now added middle school lessons. So maybe the kids that choose to ride from town out to the school could do so safely. Or you could get an infrastructure grant and make a trail, like Wabasha has done for their school, which is about a mile south of the densely developed part of town. As far as the money goes, I think the cost would be minimal, as I mentioned, but I think there'll be a fiscal note as part of this that will go as part of the transportation finance omnibus bill. And I think the appropriations that we're talking about here in MnDOT's general fund base would easily cover that.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just really quick follow-up. So I appreciate that. I don't disagree with the fact that students should know how to ride a bike safely, should know how to be a pedestrian safely. You know, I walk across the street regularly, mm-hmm. so these things are important. But what I'm always fearful of is I used to teach. I was a teacher for 8 years in southern Minnesota, and my biggest fear is when we're providing these unfunded mandates to schools. So when we're talking about there is a fiscal note, there will be allocations to these schools to provide that training. That's a great thing. It's a great sign. We have arguments on the floor regularly about how some study is going to cost $2,000, and that study then puts it non-germane to the bill because it expands the scope and sequence of this. So this is where we should take care of it on the front end. So then when we're on the House floor, we don't have an argument about the $2,000 extra it's going to take, because it takes, you know, it takes 5 minutes of your time to have the training, and you're taking it out of the school day, and the teachers are getting paid. But wait, is it really that way? But the teachers are all salaried, so we don't have that argument. So I'd appreciate if we take care of it here so we can make sure that these schools are funded, even though it is a 30-minute class to train these kids to be safe on their bicycles.
Sure. And
thank you, Representative Olson, for those questions and points. I think we have both folks up here want to respond. Representative Elkins?
Yeah, just real quick, we did put the education portions of this bill through the Education Policy Committee last week as House File 678. So.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Wilson, members of the committee, about half the schools in Minnesota right now are choosing to implement the much more substantial curriculum than just the bookmark and a flyer going home in the backpack. It takes more than a week. It actually is a week of on-bike safety training with FIAD, in FIAD class in many schools. And MnDOT, bless their hearts, or the Statewide Health Improvement Partnership has provided bike fleets. And we will deliver the bikes, a trailer full of bikes to your school for free and train the teachers for free and pay, subpay for when they're away from class to take that walk bike fun training. So we've been doing it for about 10 years and it's really quite widely accepted.
Thank you for those questions, Representative Olson. Representative Murphy and then Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In my area, the largest city is 3,500 people, it's Perham, and it drops off a lot after that. I mean, our average town is 200 to 500 people. Mm-hmm. How do you see this program really benefiting the majority of the towns in my area? And I guess my follow-up is that it looks like this is more of a local concern rather than a statewide directive. So I'm just curious how you think it might benefit mine. We already had an education on all of those. So how do you see it helping out my district?
Mr. Grilley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, many of the small school districts in Minnesota are already using the Walk Bike Fun curriculum. And you know, they're consolidated school districts. And I think the way it benefits children is, you know, they grow up and go away. Many of them will grow up and go away to college or move to the city. And it gives them a start as to what. And the other thing is a personal one. My son said, you know, Dad, I didn't really realize all the things you were trying to teach me about bicycling until I took driver safety. So it's a head start on driver safety. And I think that's a very, very good investment.
I understand the part about the education and the safety, but my question is built a little bit more about how do we get our money's worth out of this investment from the state in my district.
Mr. Grilley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I really think that it's a combination of public health and just simply kids' safety. That right now you require bus safety in state statute that includes pedestrian safety. Almost every kid rides a bicycle, and it's a good idea, especially in small communities where there aren't isn't a lot of bicycle infrastructure, so they're riding in the streets. I think it's best to teach them at a very young age what the rules are for riding in the street.
Thank you. We have Representative Petersburg, then Representative Kraft, then Representative Brand, and then we have one more testifier on this bill, and so then we'll move on after that. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just asking if Mr. Grilley would be available when we talk about the final bill, if necessary.
Representative Petersburg, we'll finish up with our questions, and then we have another testifier, and then if you want to save your question for that, we'll move on. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to follow up on the question asked by Representative Murphy because, and maybe you could help me here, I'm not sure to, but part of this bill is an appropriation for funding that includes construction of, and maintenance of bike trail and pedestrian infrastructure. So is that also a way that this could benefit districts potentially in Mr. Murphy's district?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kraft, I think that's certainly the case. Okay. Putting this into MnDOT's base budget would make, and they do small, you know, they try and target small communities with a significant portion of their grant funding. And the other great thing about this is it's state money, not federal money. So the procedure for applying for this money is a lot easier than it would be if it was only the federal money, which is coming to the state right now.
And do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you.
Okay, and I believe that's through the IIJA mm-hmm. package. So
actually,
it's called Safe Communities Fund.
Well, actually, it's been an ongoing appropriation as part of the federal transportation bill since the early 1990s, called Transportation Alternatives.
Okay.
And it's about $75 million a year that comes to Minnesota that can only be spent on those transportation alternatives, which include biking and walking.
Thank you. All right, our last committee question for now is Representative Brand. Well, we'll return back to Representative Petersburg. Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. You know, there's a lot of great components to this bill. Of course, you know, the James or the Jim Oberstar Bikeway, of course, is a recognition of the champion that Jim Oberstar was in transportation here in Minnesota. A quick question about that. And so if you don't have the information, if you could send it to me, but are we using existing infrastructure along like I-35 to get to Duluth and then points north? I know there's a portion where there's no bike trail between, I think it's either Two Harbors or Lutzen or something like that, to Grand Marais itself. There's no bike infrastructure, so they'd probably be using Highway 61. But if you have a map or something that I can help use to visualize it, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brand, there is a map already on MnDOT's website.
Yes.
And it's one that is constantly being edited as shoulders are being added to roads. And you are absolutely right. There is not a solid off-road connection from here to Duluth or from the Iowa border to Lake Itasca. But it uses bikeable roads. Some people don't think the 12-foot shoulder on Highway 61 is the most desirable south of the Twin Cities. But they've done some wonderful things in Lake City. You know, they just, MnDOT, as they rebuilt Highway 61 through Lake City, it now has bike lanes. It's a 4-to-3 conversion.
Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the other thing I would say is just I'm impressed with how important it is to have, you know, the Lake Superior Hiking Trail up there in Cook County and Lake County and St. Louis County to the local economies. Mm-hmm. And I think this is also going to help provide that opportunity to increase the benefits to the economy up there as well.
Just one more.
Mr. Grilley.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I was told by a hotel owner in Wabasha that they have 3 to 5 bicyclists riding the Mississippi River Trail a week, and that that was the difference between having a profitable week and a flat week. So you're absolutely right. As more and more people start using these facilities, it will have a significant impact on the local economies.
Thank you. And I would just add to members of the committee, on National Night Out, I always bike around my district. It's compact that way. And I carry highway maps and MnDOT bike maps. And I will tell you that there was a lot of interest in the MnDOT bike maps. So a little tip for National Night Out or other community events. People really do like to have those maps. And you can get them from MnDOT, highway and bike. I would make a public service announcement there. So we have one more testifier, and then after the testifier, Representative Petersburg will return back to your question. Is that how you'd like to handle it?
It doesn't matter. I just wanted to make sure, Mr. Chair, if we need to, we can bring.
Okay. Well, I wonder if you have a question specifically for Mr. Grilley.
I don't.
Oh, okay. Okay. But he'll be available. He will be available. Okay. Great. So we have another testifier signed up. Lewis Moore is.
Oh. And I'm sorry, Chair Hornstein, I forgot to tell you that Louis's wife is sick this morning. He's not able to come.
Okay.
He was a dear friend of Bill and just wanted to say a few words about Bill.
Well, you know, this is maybe a good opportunity to remind the committee and especially our first-year folks that, you know, we will be returning to this bill again. It will be incorporated in one or both of our omnibus bills or parts of it. So there'll be another opportunity to discuss it at that time when we do markup. So if Lewis is available, we could have him then. Okay, is there any additional committee discussion or questions or comments? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm correct. This is going to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Correct.
All right, thank you. And I'm wondering if somebody from the department could come up and answer a few questions about implementation and what's going on with this.
I see Mr. Rudin. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with answering questions from Mr. Petersburg. Go ahead. Sorry, I thought he was testifying. I forgot you were doing a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Rudin, I know that there had been an advisory committee like this before that was sunsetted. A couple of questions. First of all, has there been any follow-up in regards to doing what this committee or advisory council is doing after the sunset, and how is that different than the active transportation program that's currently in underneath the department's responsibility?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs, and you're correct that the former committee did sunset. However, we do have sort of informal advisory committees for both the Safe Routes to School program and the Active Transportation program. And I think we would envision this new committee sort of taking over the responsibilities for those two existing committees. So in effect, I think the way we would operate it is, you know, those separate committees would sort of cease to exist, and the issues that they deal with would be taken over by this new committee.
Representative Petersburg.
Mr. Chair, I'll get back to that. But at this point, the way I see the bill, it requires the department to provide staffing for this particular committee. And it doesn't look like they get reimbursement for costs, but the other people do. What kind of staff numbers do you think the department will need to provide, since we don't have a fiscal note with any kind of assumptions here at this point?
Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, I probably need to get a little more detail from our Office of Transit and Active Transportation on that. But again, I think they're currently providing support to both the Safe Routes to School program and the Active Transportation program out of both the Office of Transit and the Office of State Aid, which administers a lot of these grants as well. So I don't know that it would necessarily be you know, a significant amount of increased responsibility for MnDOT staff. I think maybe just kind of a refocusing of some of the things that they're doing today.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have one more question.
First a comment, and then a final question for the department. And that is that I'm sure that you will get us a fiscal note and stuff before you mark this up. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
I'm assuming that we will finally get a fiscal note in regards to the cost for this, right? And
yep,
all the assumptions for that, yep, because I think that's important for us to know that in this fiscal policy to do that. My last question to Mr. Rudin is that I know currently there is a transportation advisory council that is involved with vehicle miles traveled and some other things that are really designed for longer term issues that aren't necessarily bike related. Seems like, according to the title, like it's very similar. Are these separate? Are they gonna stay separate? Are they gonna be combined? What is the thought on the department side?
I think, thank you, Representative Bruce. I think you're referring to the Sustainable Transportation right. Advisory Committee.
Right.
Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We have a Sustainable Transportation Advisory Committee, and you know, as you pointed out, that group is really focused on sort of long-term efforts to reduce impacts to the environment of transportation. And so, certainly, a piece of that is, you know, having bicycle and pedestrian networks so that people can make trips through bike ped activities rather than, you know, getting in a vehicle and traveling by themselves. So I would say that the work is, you know, it's certainly related, but I think it's distinct enough that the STAC, as we refer to it, Sustainable Transportation Advisory Committee, would continue even with the creation of this committee, which would be really focused in on these two programs.
All right, thank you. And one quick
question. Sure, absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill also puts a fair amount of dollars into the base from general fund. And so I'm going to reserve my discussion for that when it gets put into the bill and once we find targets and so forth.
Correct.
Because that's a big deal.
Yes. This is, and I was having a conversation with Representative Elkins about this very issue today. And, you know, this is obviously going to be, I would venture to guess, you know, this figure will be changed or altered based on our target. So it's a point well taken, Representative Petersburg, and, you know, I think you can expect some additional variation.
All right.
Based you. On that. But I would say that in the past, you know, we have used a portion of our general fund target for this purpose, and I would certainly support some portion of it going to an ongoing base allocation for this purpose. Okay, maybe let's have closing comments from both Mr. Grilley and Representative Elkins, and we'll move on to our next bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I just wanted to say that I personally serve on the MnDOT's Safe Routes to School Advisory Committee and the Sustainable Transportation Advisory Committee. And I think Mr. Radin is correct. There wouldn't be, the staff is already providing all the, as I said, I think MnDOT's doing a really good job right now. And also, I really believe that the Sustainable Transportation Advisory Council's recommendation also includes bike education because of that strong return on investment. And my closing thought is that some of the policy stuff in this bill was passed by this committee in 2018 and passed by the Minnesota House 122-0. So it's not really controversial. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And closing comments from the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the committee for consideration.
Wonderful. Okay, well, did you initially move this bill, or did I? I don't remember.
You did.
Okay, so I will renew my motion that House File 677, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus transportation finance and or policy bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Have you ever had and or in a motion? So we're plowing new ground here in the Transportation Committee. I also wanted to thank Bill Dooley's family for being here. And we really appreciate your presence, and we really appreciate Bill so much. So, thank you. And thank you, Representative Elkins, for including Bill's name in the bill. Okay. Our next bill is House File 246. Representative Hanson J. Is with us today, and we will spend the bulk of this meeting, or all the remaining time we have in this meeting, on this bill. And I will move that House File 246 be laid over. Members, just a quick announcement before Representative Hanson presents the bill. We've had a lot of interest in this bill, and I think there's some discussions that will be taking place between Scott and Dakota County on this, and I wanted to allow some time for them to have those conversations. And the plan will be that the bill is being laid over, but the plan is that we'll revisit this a week from Thursday on February 16th, and at that time the likely motion will be to move this to the general register. But we want to allow time for conversation, and we're luckily in a point in the session where those talks can happen. But what we're going to do today is have public testimony. There may be opportunity for very limited additional public testimony a week from Thursday, but the bulk of the testimony and presentation of the bill, of course, will be today. So welcome. And we're very excited to hear more about House File 246.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My comments today will be short because this is a fairly straightforward bill. House File 246 seeks to do two things. First, it repeals the statutory prohibition on an old rail line that runs through my community called the Dam Patch Commuter Rail Line. This is and has been a priority for the city of Savage for over 20 years since the prohibition was put into place in 2002. They would like to consider the future growth and opportunities that this line offers our community, though I want to be clear, this bill does not allocate any funding, nor does it call for any studies. In time, I will come to you with more information about my community's desire to conduct a study on this line. So at that time, we can talk about that. But for now, I will spare you all the details about the vast history of what has happened on this line and the conversations around it. This bill simply repeals the prohibition and empowers my local government and promotes their local control. Our residents should not be left out of the opportunities to do as they wish with this infrastructure because of an overreaching state statute. The second purpose of this bill is about a line in Rochester. In my work around this issue and with Chair Hornstein's expertise around this, I learned that there's a similar prohibition on a line in Rochester. So this year, I've partnered up with the Rochester delegation. You'll see them as co-authors on my bill, and I've included a line for their line in this repealer. So again, there are no studies or funds included in this bill for either line. And it's my belief that local governments are best suited to determine if they want to discuss or study these lines. And these outdated prohibitions do nothing more than hinder growth and local control. A decade ago, Northfield City Council member Susie Nikasian told NPR, "We shouldn't settle policies by gags. I just don't think putting a prohibition that holds the rest of us hostage is quite fair or the way to do it." And I couldn't agree with her more. So a decade later, here I am to continue this conversation, to repeal this. This is a priority for my city. It's a priority for SCALE as well. That's the Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency as well. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to testifiers.
Thank you so much. And then members, after the public testimony, if you have questions of the author or want to discuss the bill or make comments, we'll do it at that time. So the first person to testify is Jesse Cook, who will be joining us virtually.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jesse Cook, and I am a student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I appreciate the opportunity, once again, to speak in support of House File 246 to address the moratoriums imposed on the development of regional and commuter rail in Minnesota. Some call them outdated. I say that's a criminal understatement. These moratoriums have been in place since before I was born. The gag order itself is almost old enough to order a tall glass margarita at a Vegas casino. Suffice it to say, this action is long overdue and a critical first step in cementing Minnesota's role as a leader in Midwest transit development. Three times now, I, along with my colleagues, have testified in support of lifting these moratoriums. The committee, of course, recognizes that this House file lays the groundwork for future transit proposals, reviving the Dam Patch Corridor, revisiting Rochester Zip Rail. And when those bills make their way through the political process, likely through this very committee, we will be here. Both this bill and its companion have been backed by unrelenting support, and those of us here today, I can guarantee that we represent only a sliver of the support you'll see once these plans are put into motion. A sustainable transit system is a future worth fighting for environmental justice, for economic viability, and when that time comes, we will be behind it all the way. For today, though, I urge you to stand in support of House File 246. Members of the committee, whatever your objections to regional or commuter rail, recognize that the passage of this bill is vital to the decision-making authority of local communities. By passing this bill, you are making no guarantee of future action. You are neither allocating funds nor approving any new transit studies. All this does is return the power to the communities who ought to have it. For too long, these moratoriums have greatly undermined the democratic process. This is our chance to repeal a gross overreach of the state government and allow these communities a say in their future. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse Cook, for your testimony. Our next testifier is also virtual, Darwin Schaeferling.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lauren Schaeferling.
Okay, we don't ha- we oh, have I'm your sorry. Audio, we don't have video, but you can certainly testify via audio.
Oh, my apologies, I was reading off of my, I had my testimony written up on another app. I think I might have closed my camera feed.
okay. We see you now.
May I testify via audio only?
Okay, proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much. My name is Darwin Schaeferlein, and I am a Bloomington resident. Over these last weeks, my friends and I have testified on House File 246, as well as its companion bill, Senate File 74, of which both of these have made it through committee so far. As stated before, these bills do not provide funding or any studies, but are a simple lifting of moratoriums. For over 20 years, Minnesota has been held back by legislation which has unrightfully controlled how Minnesotans can choose to spend their taxpayer dollars, specifically just to prevent the study of the Dan Patch and Rochester Zip Rail corridors. While billions of state dollars have gone to highways and road infrastructure, we have left Minnesotans without a car to deal with an expensive, infrequent intercity shuttle and bus network between the Twin Cities and greater Minnesota. As taxpayers to this state, we deserve the right to choose how we should improve our transportation needs without dystopian, outdated, and myopic legislation holding us back. Even if you do not support rail transit, you should support the democratic principles of letting taxpayer dollars be controlled by taxpayers. This is the closest in 20 years we have gotten to overturning these moratoriums, and I urge this committee to support House File 246 in the interest of us Minnesotans, particularly those of us who need alternatives to driving. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll have two more virtual testifiers, and then we have two people who are in the audience that will testify in person. Our next testifier is Rand Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rand Carlson, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak in strong support of House File 246. Care deeply about reducing emissions and improving transportation options for residents. Ending the gag rules prohibiting the study of the Dan Patch Corridor and intercity rail between the Twin Cities and Rochester will get us one step closer to both goals. The cities surrounding the Dan Patch Corridor and Zip Rail have been planning neighborhoods and connecting transit lines for these projects. Rochester has created a neighborhood named Central Station that will be focused on their station for the Zip Rail project. The issue is, these cities can't. Due to short-sighted overreach by the state government in 2002 and again in 2016, these areas cannot study the projects in the detail needed, with help from MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council. Savage, which has long desired for an alternative option instead of the consistently worsening congestion on Minnesota River bridges, cannot study the Dan Patch project with the required documentation because of these rules. What this bill does is simply remove the moratoriums from state law. It does not cost the state one iota of money, but it does bring back local control to decide what each city thinks is best for its transportation needs. The state wouldn't ban a city from constructing a road in its limits, so it shouldn't stop a city from exploring a rail option in its limits. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And our last virtual testifier is Tim Marino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today to strongly advocate for HF 246 to be passed, allowing for the Dan Patch line and the intercity rail line between the Twin Cities and Rochester to be studied, thereby removing the gag rule, which hinders the ability of our infrastructure to be sustainable. According to the EPA, transportation is the highest source of greenhouse gas emissions, and within transportation, light-duty vehicles such as cars make up the majority of those emissions. We must reduce our car dependence in order to make a dent on climate change. Electric cars alone will not solve the problem. Transit is about connections and allows communities to be accessible and not gate-kept behind a steering wheel with an average yearly cost of over $10,000 to own and operate. Ladies and gentlemen of this committee, while I could touch on the great connections the Dan Patch line and rail to Rochester would create and the many dense locations that these lines would reach, we are not here today to discuss the feasibility of such a project. We are only asking for the mere ability for planners to do what they do best and study this line and speak to the communities along these lines and those who would benefit from these lines instead of an obscure state law preventing all of that. Rail is safe, rail is sustainable, and rail promotes equity and economic development. This is why I'm calling on the members of this committee to end this gag order and to allow for the study of these routes to commence. If we are serious in creating sustainable infrastructure, we must be allowed to study it. Thank you.
Thank you so much to all of our virtual testifiers. We have two more testifiers in person. Brad Larson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Brad Larson, City Administrator for the City of Savage. Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Thank you, the rest of the committee members. Thank you to Representative Hansen for authoring the bill. As I stated, I'm with the City of Savage, and we have been advocating for the repeal of the Dan Patch gag order since it was passed in 2001. We think that we need options to look at to resolve the issue of congestion in Scott County. Scott County is one of the fastest growing communities or counties in the state of Minnesota. We already have congestion issues on our river crossings. We're looking for solutions and options. Dan Patch, the Dan Patch line and the Dan Patch River crossing is one of those solutions. We believe, but we can't study it. And that's what we're looking to do here. We're looking to repeal the bill or the law that established the gag order and allow us to study this. We think this is a state issue. It affects the region. It affects the metro specifically. And we're looking for different options. Right now, 169 Bridge is already congested at peak hours. County Road 41 that goes to the west is congested at peak hours. Scott County is expected to add 50,000 people by 2040. And a significant portion of those people are going to be using those bridges. And right now they're congested. The Scott County Comprehensive Plan notes that the 169 bridge will be completely congested by 2040. So we're looking for different options, and we think Dan Patch is one of those options. So what are we trying to do here? It's been stated before. We're just looking at the ability to study this. This is not putting money right now towards an evaluation, but we would like money to be put towards evaluating the possibility of the Dan Patch line. If it doesn't work for the purpose of for transportation, if it's not effective, that should be debated in the light of day. That's what we're looking for. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And then we have also Hunter Cantrell, our former colleague. Good to see you again, Representative Cantrell.
All right.
Good Transportation morning. Committee, welcome to you. please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Hunter Cantrell, former state representative and resident of Savage for about 20 years. And I'm here today to voice my strong support for Representative Hansen's bill to repeal the restrictive anti-commuter rail gag rules that have embodied the harm of short-sighted, restrictive legislating that inhibits the abilities of communities to develop modern, equitable transit infrastructure. I will be focusing my comments on the portion of the bill pertaining particularly to the Dan Patch commuter rail line. This is a bill that is 20 years in the making. And as Representative Hansen said, it simply lifts the statutory moratorium that has forbidden any inclusion or other exploratory actions pertaining to studying and or building this Dan Patch rail line by regional rail authorities, MnDOT, and the Met Council. Anyone who lives in the South Metro knows that we need to have every possible option on the table to develop a robust public transit infrastructure that meets the needs of our community and businesses south of the river. I am thrilled that this is a priority for the City of Savage, Scott County, and Scale, and I want to encourage Scott and Dakota County leaders to continue advocating and working on developing transit options and for the passage of this repealer of this moratorium. We currently only have as you know, Mr. Vice Chair, three highways that lead us north of the river in the morning or during rush hour in the afternoon. Despite our city and our county's population growth, there is unlikely to be any additional bridges built to ease increasingly burdensome traffic congestion anytime soon, nor would such an action be beneficial for the welfare of our community or local ecosystem. We need to be creative and innovative as we seek as we look to the future. Over the years of growing up and living in Savage, I have seen and heard firsthand the countless challenges people face in accessing upward mobility because our bus infrastructure is insufficient to meet our community's needs, and many of our residents either cannot afford a car or are unable to drive in their advanced age. Savage and the surrounding communities are phenomenal places to live and start a business. I myself plan on practicing medicine in Scott County. But if my future patients are unable to commute safely and affordably to medical appointments I refer them to in the cities or to their work and educational opportunities, then their health and overall stability will most certainly be negatively impacted as a result. This bill is a step towards opening the door to all transit options for improving our infrastructure to grow our economy, serve the needs of our communities, and allow for the considerations of forward-thinking investments in more efficient and affordable transit options in the South Metro. And I would love to ride the train with Representative Tapke someday, too.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. Are there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify either in favor or in opposition or neutral position on the bill? Okay, great. Well, this is an opportunity for committee discussion to the bill. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I understand that we'll have opportunity for amendments and further debate in a couple of weeks, but I just wanted to start off by saying, you know, I'm hoping that I can clarify some, I think, what sounds like misperceptions with some of the testifiers. I think there was one that said taxpayers need to control their tax dollars. And the reality is that you and I are elected to do that. That is our responsibility, is to deal with the tax dollars, because we collect the taxes from everybody and have to distribute them. And so it's something that we take all very seriously, and I think it's important. However, I also heard something about local control, which I also agree with. And if I'm wrong, please let me know, but I believe that the prohibition for the Met Council not looking at the zip rail to Rochester does not preclude any local entity from doing that research themselves or study. It simply says that the council can't do it. And if I'm wrong with that, please somebody do that. But to the author and to any testifier, if you're really interested in allowing the local authorities to go ahead and research this, why not just repeal Subdivision 4, which says regional rail authorities can't look at it, instead of the whole blanket? The point is that as representatives that have to deal with dollars from everybody, we do have some concerns over the Met Council's decisions in the past and a few other things that are going on, and I think we are cautious about that. But I don't think we want to reduce local control and their ability to do so. So is there a reason why you didn't just exclude that? Because obviously Met Council and others can't do any of those studies without funding from someplace.
Representative Hansen and or Brad Larson, do you want me to come?
Thank you, Chair, yes. Representative, for the question. You're correct in that I can't speak to the Rochester one. I'm not as familiar with that, but with the Dan Pash line, there is no the local community can study it. We actually have spent money on studying the rail. We think this is a regional issue, and so we're looking for regional assistance, just like other projects that come before this committee. We feel like this is a regional issue that will have regional impacts and that the state should have a role in the solution.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and I think that's certainly valid for you to have those concerns, and those of us that are sitting with the responsibility of issuing that role and the dollars for that, we sometimes need a little bit more information and certainly have some sort of direction. This is actually even before my time, but what I understand is that there is no agreement along the communities between Dan Patch and further north, and that's the reason why it became so controversial and was always in the legislature and never could come to an agreement, and is the reason why finally the legislature said, hey, we don't want to hear about it anymore, so we're just not going to do that. And so it's important that communities along the way have that discussion first before they come to the legislature and figure out, at least in my opinion, before they want to expand this whole issue again. My two cents worth. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So First of all, I have no issue with communities talking about better ways to get where they need to go. My concern here is, though, I'm seeing that there is not an entire idea that everyone along this line is on board with this issue. So you were talking about authors to this bill, and we're missing a substantial portion of this line who have co-authored this bill. I'm wondering, the representative from Medina, representative from St. Louis Park, neither of those individuals have signed on to this bill. The original individual who got this gag order on here was from Edina, and I know based off of a study here that was done by the city of Edina in 2017 that they have no interest whatsoever in pursuing something like this, and they say there's strong opposition and not strong, no one is strongly in favor of this, but my concern here is if we utilize taxpayer dollars from the state of Minnesota to do a study that is so opposed by individuals along the line, it's not going to happen unless we force it down their throat. So that's my big problem. I have no problem with Savage doing a study on their own. I have no problem with individuals along this line who are interested in this, having this conversation, discussing this, paying their own taxpayer dollars on this, and then going to the city council for Edina and saying, hey, this is a viable option. It'll work. Let's tie in together. And if we can get an entire agreement on this, then I'm cool with that. But spending taxpayer dollars and throwing it in a pit and lighting it on fire doesn't seem like a really good idea. So my question is, where are the other individuals, the other representatives, the other city councils on this line at? Have they expressed interest in this? I don't want to, you know, just throw state taxpayer dollars down the drain.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. So I'll just make a few comments on the last few things that were said here. The first I'll say is that good work is done in collaboration with all stakeholders, and we can't do any of that without lifting this gag order. And I want to remind this committee that the bill before us does not issue any taxpayer dollars. It's simply to repeal a moratorium. As I mentioned in my opening statements, I will be bringing a bill before you that is to study that, and we can have that discussion, I think, at that time. But with the bill that's before us today and our customary, you know, process of keeping the conversation to the bill before us, I'd like to keep that there. But again, I am absolutely happy to have the conversation about the study and the other stakeholders who have questions about this. Lifting this moratorium doesn't put any money into it. So to your question, Representative Olson. I also want to comment that this actually was passed by the legislature and it was vetoed by a governor. And so there was both bodies, bipartisan support, that passed the repeal of this moratorium. It just did not get through the governor's office. And again, when we think about who gets to make the decisions about what happens in a community, when the legislature, as we've heard, makes these decisions, we made that decision. And then somebody else took it upon themselves to change that. I don't represent Edina, which is no surprise to anybody, but I don't think that one community should decide what everybody can do. And so my position on this is that we repeal the moratorium so that we can have the conversation and that my community has the tools they need to do the research on their infrastructure in collaboration with all of the stakeholders. It is, in my opinion, not good policy to have an overreaching state moratorium like this. It's not good for our community. As you've heard from testifiers, the South Metro is in desperate need of additional transportation options. We at least need to see what the options are. And with this in place, this is just a barrier. We're trying to move this so that we can get to the next step, and I can bring before you the much more controversial bill to do the study.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I agree with you on the idea that a community should be able to have that conversation. I actually do agree with you. My concern is for protecting taxpayer dollars, especially individuals who live in my district or live in every other district that doesn't have this line. There's no chance that I'm going to drive to Savage and then jump on the rail line and then go. So I'm looking for my constituents, their individual interests as well. So I would love, you know, you're talking about, let's have this conversation. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. We're going to revisit this bill in the future, and we'll have an amendment prepared that will just protect state taxpayer dollars until we have a consensus from the entirety along the line. Would that be something that you would be interested in looking at? Because obviously, if we have individuals along this line who don't want this, it's going to be very difficult for that to happen. So I think that we should have the conversation, but I think we should protect taxpayer dollars, the state dollars. I think your city should be more than welcome to provide their own funds to do this. Would you be interested in some sort of working together on some sort of an amendment that would protect our entire state taxpayer dollars until that conversation is had and until we have some form of a consensus along this line?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Olson, for the question. I'm always open to a conversation, and I think it's important to remember that this is done in collaboration. As I've already said, the best deals are done in collaboration with all stakeholders. I would invite you to come to the South Metro. We have great opportunities for tourism between Valley Fair and Renfest and Canterbury Park and Mystic Lake that we do hope that at some point in time, folks like from your community could come and visit our city and come and do a lot more business there. So this is an added opportunity for the entire state to bring in more tax dollars, to bring in more visitors to our state, because if you haven't done something fun in the South Metro, our vice chair here, I'm sure, can attest, we have a lot to do and a lot to offer to the state of Minnesota. And it is one of the busiest hubs. We have the Ports of Savage that run on Highway 13 and 169, which brings in a good amount of the goods and services that come into this state. And so adding a train there is not just for commuter things. There can be a lot of other conversations. So long as we keep the entire picture in perspective, I'm absolutely open to a conversation.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation to visit your district. I drive through it every time I go up to the Twin Cities because my district is in the south. So this actually, you know, if it were to work, it would benefit my area as well. I completely understand that. So I'm glad that you're open to the conversation. We'll make sure that we have some sort of an amendment to that point drafted up for the next time we have this conversation. Thank you.
And that will be Thursday, February 16th.
And Chair, I'm sorry, could I have Brad
yes,
also
yes,
comment on
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Proceed with
thank you,
your
Chair.
Response.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Thank you, Representative Olson. One point I would like to make is that when we do a study, we do an evaluation, we need the input from MnDOT. We need input from the state. Otherwise, those studies and those evaluations are pretty much worthless, because if we study or do an evaluation, we put together information that's not useful for the state, who may be a partner in the future, it doesn't work. So we do need the partnership of the state early in the process. It would be no different than if the county came to your community and wanted to do an evaluation on an intersection without talking to your community, or if the state came to the county and started working on a county road intersections without the input. We need the input of all the stakeholders, as Representative Hansen has commented on.
Thank you. We have a question or comment from Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Olson mentioned St. Louis Park. I do represent about 80% of St. Louis Park, and I have signed on as a co-author to this bill. I think the questions raised about taxpayer dollars are always good ones to discuss, but we should be able to discuss them, and we should have the right people doing the analysis. So I'm supportive of this. Thanks.
Thank you for that clarification. Are there any other members that wanted to make any points or questions or discussion? Yes, Representative Fogelman.
Mr. Chair, I guess I have a question. We have heard how the light rail ridership is way down, mm-hmm. and Metro Transit is down, and we subsidize those quite a bit per rider. How is this going to be any different than those if you don't have the ridership? How is the outcome going to be any different than what we have already?
Representative Hansen or?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Fogelman. The bill before us actually doesn't speak to ridership or a train or anything like that, so I would like to avoid any scope creep aside from what the language in my bill says. But what I will say on behalf of my community is that we are a very diverse community with a number of people who are both aging, people with disabilities, people who don't drive. And the current options right now for transportation outside of our small region are very limited. And so while you may be seeing ridership down in other parts of the state, I can't comment on what that would look like in our community because we can't do the study. And so we want to be able to answer that question for you. Anecdotally, I can tell you, as I was door knocking this year, I heard from a lot of people who asked, what are we going to do to improve our transportation in the South Metro? We only have a few roads that, like we have heard here today, that get us across the river. And if you've traveled north or south of the river, it can be a lot during the day. So I know for myself, I would love to take a train here to work instead of having to sit on 35E traffic, where if one person swerves off or one accident or one breakdown backs the road up all the way down to Egan or further. And so that is really not great when you have 8:30 a.m. committees either. So trying to make sure we can improve those options. Again, we need to look at all of the options available. We have the orange line that was recently added in our community. There's some challenges with where that was placed and the safety of one of the intersections. And so we have another representative addressing that. But we have seen more and more people utilizing that line. From my house, I can see Minneapolis. The skyline is beautiful on the River Valley. But before the orange line, it would take four or five buses to get there and about four times the time it would take to drive. And so adding all these additional options are just so needed for our community. My daughter's 18 and doesn't drive. You know, she would love to be able to take some transportation options. And there's a lot of other youth that are that age. And I would turn it over to Brad to answer any other questions about potential ridership from our community.
Do you have a follow-up?
Thank you for that. And I guess I agree with Representative Olson. I think it is good that the counties and cities want to have that control.
Thank you. And I do, we haven't scheduled it yet, but I appreciate Representative Fogelman that you raising, you know, issues of transit ridership. And also we're going to talk about road utilization as well with MnDOT at a later date. I think there's a lot of, at this stage of the pandemic, a lot of data that now exists on what is working and what isn't working and potentially what the future of transportation looks like. We had quite a bit of discussion about that with Representative Elkins' bill on 494, but I think we're definitely going to spend more time because it's a critical, we're at a real important crossroads in terms of how we plan for the future. So I appreciated that comment. Representative Nelson, Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to start by saying deja vu all over again. We've heard this almost every year since you and I have been in the legislature. And also the comment about that transit doesn't pay for itself. Neither do our roads. We subsidize our roads as much as we subsidize public transportation through property taxes and other means. And so it's interesting that this argument always comes up when we talk about transit. And we forget about the fact that we subsidize our roads through property taxes as much. So, again, deja vu all over again.
Yes, we were very young when this first. Okay, members, are there any other questions or comments? If not, I want to actually correct something I said about a future meeting and location. So I'm going to go over these. Of course, it will be posted on our site, but for in terms of future meetings and locations. And by the way, before we do that, thank you. This was a really good discussion. And members, I want to remind you that a week from Thursday, we will, if there are amendments, consider them then, and it would be our intention to then to take this matter up again at that time. And again, my understanding that some other conversations may be taking place between different interested parties, and so we may have new information to consider on the 16th. So again, this is an issue that engendered a lot of interest, and we want to be very deliberative and respectful of perspectives from a variety of places that are coming into our committee on this question. So with that, we'll lay over again House File 246. Okay, members, wanted to go over a few dates and locations here for you. This Thursday is actually when we're going to be in Room 5, not next week. So Thursday, the February 9th, in Room 5 at 8:30, we'll hear the governor's budget. So come with the questions. That will be, we won't have public testimony, but we will have committee discussion of the governor's budget. So come with your questions, and we'll have representatives from MnDOT, the Met Council, and Department of Public Safety. So that's Room 5 on Thursday. Then on Tuesday, we'll be in Room 200 back in the SOB. And Tuesday the 14th, we're going to have a hearing really on the needs of our smaller communities townships, small cities, counties, other cities. They have significant transportation needs that are not covered under the state trunk highway system. And so this is going to be a very important hearing on Tuesday the 14th in room 200. And then next Thursday we'll be back here and we'll hear the remainder of House File 246 and a couple of other bills that will be posted. And then on Tuesday the 21st, we're back in room 5. So again, this will all be communicated to you, but I wanted to make sure that, again, that no one shows up here wondering why no one is here. So, well, probably it will be another committee. So with that, members, thank you very much for a good discussion on two bills today, and we are adjourned.